We're also joined by Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning.
Joe, a former Rhode Islander, argues in a piece published in cityjournal.com this week that Rhode Island's long-running economic woes are due to Democratic policies. How do you respond?
Which Democratic policies? Could you be more specific?
Emphasis on social spending, tax policies that are seen as taking a big bite, things like that.
I can tell you from my position in the House, I think the House is kind of moderate. I think our policies are moderate, and I think the state of Rhode Island is as Democratic as you want to say. We've had a Republican governor for the last 12 years, and then we have had Link Chafee, who was elected as an independent and then has become a Democrat. But there hasn't been much of a policy change in terms of the budget and our priorities in the last 4 years as they were in the previous 12 years.
Nonetheless, the Democrats have basically controlled the General Assembly since 1935. So how much responsibility does the Democratic Party bear for Rhode Island's long-running economic woes?
I can tell you that our economic woes are very unique in terms of Rhode Island, having to do with a lot of factors besides who's in power or who's in the General Assembly. But the Democratic Party is a big tent, and we have many elements of the Democratic Party. And I think maybe even you may have said that the Democratic Party are full of a lot of people who are on the moderate and conservative vein. So just because you say Democrat doesn't necessarily mean you're saying liberal.
Let's go to Scott.
I'm just wondering, we talk about the minimum wage. What do you think as Labor Committee Chairman, I think you're the youngest one ever at the State House, how do we get to an increased minimum wage that helps bring some workers out of poverty, but also protects the interests of some small businesses?
I think we do it gradually, and we do it with notice. And I think that if we enact an increase in minimum wage, it has to be over a set period of years so that businesses can plan and know that minimum wage is going to go up January 1st by a dollar, and the following January 1st or July 1st is going to go up by another dollar. And businesses can plan accordingly. So as long as business knows what's happening and when it's happening, it's a good thing.
But $8 an hour, the current rate is too low.
I think so. I think it should be increased by at least a dollar, and I think it should be increased by the end of the year. That's my personal opinion.
How do you respond to critics who say that it's an infringement of municipal rights to include in the budget a statewide ceiling on the minimum wage?
I think that I disagree with that. It's an infringement. I think that there's some things that the state has to take control over and look at this in a uniformity way. I think it's preposterous to have a city and town that has a minimum wage substantially higher than another city and town. This is Rhode Island. The cost of living in Providence is not much different from the cost of living in Cranston as is the cost of living in Warwick. So if we're going to raise the minimum wage for any particular group or segment or for everybody, it should be done uniformly. And also, I think if you raise the minimum wage for a certain element in a certain city, you will hurt that particular industry that you're taxing, because all they will do to capture the same market share is, if you're going to hurt hotels, they'll open another hotel in Warwick instead of Providence, and capture the same market share.
On the casino issue, we're going to lose a lot of revenue by the looks to Massachusetts when they open their casinos. What kind of a strategy can the state employ to try to keep what we have in that revenue stream?
I don't know the answer to that. That is the $64,000 question, or the elephant in the room that we have to deal with next year. I can tell you that Massachusetts has had some hiccups in the opening of their casinos. Let's hope from a strictly financial perspective for Rhode Island that it continues to be a slow process. We need to look at alternative revenues. We have to make up that revenue somehow, either that or we have to look at cutting spending, because I am not in favor of raising taxes. I think in Rhode Island we have an $8.7 billion budget. That's a significant budget for a state our size, so we have to live within our means. And if our income goes down, then our spending has to go down.
On 38 Studios, you say let the state police investigation and the state lawsuit play their course before possibly the legislature should take a deeper look at how that deal came together. That's the same position of House Speaker Nicholas Mattiello, as well as Democratic gubernatorial candidate Angel Taveras. But some people say, well, when we had the state credit union crisis in the early 90s, there was an outside panel that took a pretty tough look at that situation and came up with some pretty good information. Why is it not right to have an independent panel take a look at this deal that involves some of the most powerful political insiders in Rhode Island?
I'm not saying it's not right. I'm just saying it's not the right time. I think that there's criminal investigations going on. The thing about 38 Studios, let's kind of just put that in perspective a little bit. I was not a member of the General Assembly when that was enacted. I had an opportunity to vote last year, my position I have this year, although you point out that the Speaker has it and gubernatorial candidate Angel Tavares has it, is my position that I had last year. I voted for the payment last year. I have every expectation of voting for the payment again this year in the budget. I think we need to make that payment. I don't know if any of you know this, but Judge Silverstein said in his decision recently that the lawsuit can continue. There was a motion to dismiss, which he denied, in part because the legislature made that $2.5 million payment last year.
We're talking here with State Representative Joseph Shikarchi, and now back to Scott.
I'm wondering, why do you think the master lever after all these years has become such a big issue? Is it just a vocal minority?
No, I think it's an empowerment issue for a lot of people. There are a lot of groups, Scott, a lot of good government groups, a lot of people who want the elimination of the master lever.
Yeah, but 20% or more of Rhode Island voters use it.
20% use it, but we're not disenfranchising them by taking away. They can still vote for the same candidates or the same party they want, so they're not being harmed in any way. I think that those groups who want this have wanted it for a long time, and I think it's important that we in the General Assembly show that we're listening to them and we hear them. And I think that that's an important signal to send out to good government groups, that there are members of the General Assembly who hear what they say, and that if you actually put something like this to a vote, it passes.
Supporters say the state historic tax credit is a good tool for economic development. So was it a mistake for the House budget to not include money for the historic tax credit program?
Not a mistake. I would maybe use the word a mild disappointment. Keep in mind that we still have tax credits that have not been utilized from previous years. This was just a matter of numbers. I would like to see historic tax credits. I'd like to see them again next year. So hopefully they can come back in some form. But it's just a matter of economics. And we haven't used the historic tax credits have used in the past. So there's still credits outstanding pending in various projects around the state. But let me just say this one thing about historic tax credits. I do support historic tax credits the way they were utilized in this current year's budget, which is a lot of projects are given a small amount of money instead of any one particular project be given a substantial amount of funds.
You're chairman of the Labor Committee, of course, and I'm just wondering on one issue that's very dear to the building trades unions, PLAs or public labor agreements. Do you think that PLA should be used when there's a public works job?
I think I think those agreements should be used anytime that both management and labor can work together. I have found in my private practice as an attorney who represents a lot of developers who go forward and work on projects with labor, it has a great impact. It gives people clarity. It's a negotiated agreement between the parties. I would love to see them happen. Sometimes they can happen and sometimes they can't. So it's a good economic tool for both parties if they can come to consensus.
Joe, you have about $188,000 in your campaign account. That's a lot of money for a state rep to have in his or her war chest. Why so much money, and what does that tell us about your political future?
I've been fortunate enough to raise money. And let me just tell you how I raised everyone asking that question. So I have been active, as Scott McKay will tell you, for over 20 years in politics. I have helped and donated to hundreds of candidates, both local and statewide. So when I finally made the change at this point in my life to become a candidate, I reached out to the people that I've helped, and the overwhelming support has come back to me tenfold, and I'm very grateful for that. The reason I have raised so much money and will continue to hopefully raise more if I'm lucky enough is I want to have the option to consider things in the future. I looked at other possibilities in other offices right now. We had a historic change in the General Assembly midstream. I'm very comfortable where I am. I think I can do good things as chairman of labor. I'm happy to be in the House right now. I'll see what the future brings. And as I've said to you before, both publicly and privately and on the show, I will keep all my options open. I will rule nothing out.
You've told us before that you might be interested in running for mayor of Warwick one day. Would you ever run against Scott Avedisian?
No, I would not.
Let's go back to Scott.
Just wondering, you mentioned the over $8 billion budget the state has, and we all know this. You said also that rather than raising taxes, we should live within our means. What areas of the budget realistically can be cut?
I don't know. I don't sit on the Finance Committee, but I do know that the state of Rhode Island raises $8.7 billion from our taxpayers and from the federal government. And we need to look and we need to prioritize what are the most important ways that we need to spend that money. And obviously, everybody you talk to is going to have different priorities. But the one I think we can all agree on is that there's no strong, broad-based support to raise taxes on Rhode Islanders. They're pretty taxed out right now, and that's one sure way to kill any kind of economic recovery.
We're out of time, so we have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us, Scott.
Thank you.
And State Representative Joseph Shikarchi, Democrat of Warwick.
It's always my pleasure. Have me back again, please.